as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, new life, and welcome to the Growth Group Podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in sometimes sunny Pacifica, California. And we record these podcasts to help you get the most out of your small group discussions each week. This week, we are continuing our series in Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, a series based on a book by Peter Scazzaro with that title, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, EHS. And we're near the end of that series, near the end of his book. We're on chapter 7 of 8 chapters. And this chapter is called, chapter 7 is called Growing into an Emotionally Mature Adult. Lots of really great practical stuff in this chapter, but I kind of struggled finding a single controlling idea that like explained and encapsulated all of the chapter. Kind of like in chapter 4 with the wall where we're talking about a single idea. What do you think, Jonathan, is the one thing that this chapter is all about?
I think this chapter is about loving well. I think that when I first looked at this, the subject and began to prepare, I was sort of thought, okay, this is a really pejorative chapter. People are going to think that I'm accusing them of being emotionally immature.
Oh, sure. Isn't the whole series doing that, though?
Well, I think it is, yes. I think it's challenging us over and over again. But he points out quite clearly that the scripture actually sort of narrows down the... When Jesus says... When Jesus is asked one of the most important parts of the gospel, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
So he places the focus of the gospel in love,
or at least the most important commandments, as opposed to the gospel.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he encapsulates the Christian life as being one which is driven by love, and that's a really challenging subject because, you know, we have all sorts of emotional perceptions of what love is all about. What does it mean? And of course, you know, he looks at all sorts of different subjects like expectations and conflict and all sorts of things like that. And so I've defined the sort of love we're talking about, and this is not biblical, this is Jonathan Markham's definition of love. I've defined it as relentlessly and unconditionally desiring the best for everybody else. And because I think when
it's a high calling.
And when you look at Jesus, regardless of whether he had to confront them, his confrontation was because he was determined that they were going to be able to engage with the best. If they didn't want to take it, you know, like the rich young ruler, I always love that moment in the Gospel of Mark where the rich young ruler turns away and it says, and Jesus looking upon him loved him.
Right.
But he was not prepared to compromise. Mm-hmm. And so the whole issue of clarity in the area of loving somebody well is what I think runs through this chapter.
That's good. Well, our first question is based off of a line from a book by Brother Lawrence, Practicing the Presence of God.
Yeah.
Well, that's the kind of thing that Scazzaro is super into. But in this chapter, he focuses on practicing the presence of people. Kind of an interesting idea. So the question goes like this. As you understand it, what does it mean to practice the presence of people? Consult the lists on page 168. Consulting those lists, where do emotional infants, children, adolescents, and adults stack up on their ability to be prayerfully present with other people? Are there any behaviors of emotional infants or children which you wish to shed in favor of the emotional maturity of adulthood?
Yes, I think it's really important that we recognize that growing up, we notice instantaneously if there's anything about a person's physical body, physical presence, that isn't growing up. If they don't reach their height percentiles, or they don't learn to, you know, we're panicked if they don't speak early enough, or all of those things.
They're not
gaining weight, all of those things. But the fact is that physical maturity does not measure up to emotional maturity. And you can become physically mature, and you know, you're the right height, you're the right weight, you're all of those things.
It's almost guaranteed.
It's almost guaranteed, yes. Or if it isn't, you're taking action really rapidly.
Right, you're going to see a doc.
But emotional maturity is something which is dependent upon an awful lot of other things. And we can be, you know, you remember the guy in the first chapter of the book who said he'd been a Christian 22 years,
sure.
But he'd been a one-year-old Christian 22 times.
Yeah.
And so really his emotional, spiritual maturity was at a standstill. And I think that if we're honest with ourselves, and that's the thing that this list on page 168, and which you will, if you're listening to this after the sermon on Sunday, you will receive a bookmark type shape with all of these things on there. If we're
really
honest with
it, list, I think.
It is, and when we're honest with ourselves, and you said early in the series, are you prepared to look in the mirror twice? If you're prepared to look in the mirror and ask honestly, do I exhibit some of these things? I think you'll find, if you're anything like me, you'll find that you exhibit a selection of them.
Yeah, from each category.
For each category, yes. And, you know, we don't have to beat ourselves up about that. But what we do have to do is, I believe, is recognize them and say, I need to work there. I need to work on in those areas.
I'll tell you one that stuck out to me under the emotional adult category. These adults have the capability, when under stress, to state their own beliefs and values without becoming adversarial.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I can so easily get defensive when I feel like my ideas are being questioned, and I, you know, doubt myself and my ability to express my own ideas, and just I just feel this tension. But I really can identify with a desire to have that level of maturity.
Right. And I think that we will all recognize areas where we struggle a bit. And that's a bit, and it's recognizing those things. I mean, this is the 90%.
Sure.
The 90% is the areas where we need to grow, not the places that we can shine up on the top.
So before we move on to our next question, let's just really briefly address this first bit about practicing the presence of people, because I think a number of people listening to this podcast episode might want a little bit of clarity on that point. What does that mean, practice the presence of people?
Well, I think it means paying attention.
Being aware.
Being aware. I mean, when we get to the fourth question here, with the thou and it question, we look at that a little bit more closely. But I think that it's, am I paying attention to you? I mean, when we're having a conversation, David, am I listening to you, or am I trying to formulate my question,
sure,
my response, or the how I can disagree with you? Or am I also have I taken the time to pay attention to how you're feeling, how you're doing? You know, and being glad to be in your presence.
Yeah, delighting in people, I think Scazzaro uses that phrase
yes.
in this chapter as well. But just recognizing that the person you're talking to is an autonomous individual with their own desires, plans, agendas, thoughts, opinions,
right.
And instead of steamrolling over them with our own and trying to make little images of ourselves and everyone that we meet, we have to interact with them on a peer-to-peer basis and just evaluate how they're doing, like you said.
And you know, that your presence is of value.
Mm-hmm.
in its own right.
Right, as someone who's made in the image of God.
Right.
All right, next question. We're actually going to get to the it and thou here in this question as well. Question two is the Good Samaritan. Scazzaro identifies our great problem, he calls it, our great problem, which is at the root of all relational conflict, as the delusion that I am the center of the universe. How does this self-preoccupation motivate us to treat people as an it rather than a thou? Who is at the center of the Good Samaritan's universe? What challenges did the Samaritan overcome to love the robbed man, which the priest and the Levite were unwilling to confront? And what are some of your challenges when it comes to loving your neighbor?
Yes, this is such a, you know, the Good Samaritan story is so clear in the way each of the first two people, the priest and the Levite, they were concerned about what effect this guy lying on the corner of the road, which if they weren't quite too sure who he was or whether he was dead or alive, but how would it affect me if I was to go over there? And how would it engage my life?
Right.
Whereas the
financially ritual purity, all of that.
All of those things.
Yeah.
Late for my appointment, whatever sure. it is. Then comes along the Samaritan, who had every reason to avoid
this
guy, because he was probably Jewish,
and
he was probably considered to he would have considered that to be the scum of the earth. All of those reasons, had every reason, but instead of that, he saw a person. Mm-hmm. He saw a person that was in trouble, and he said, "I'm a person too. Therefore, this person needs to help this person."
Right.
And so he treated him as a thou, or a you, if you're for a slightly less old-fashioned language. That he treated him as a you, which says, this is a human being who needs to be cared for.
Right.
And I'm a human being, and I can care for him.
I think Scazzaro uses the word thou because it almost carries a certain level of sanctity.
Yeah, he also uses it because Martin Buber, who wrote the book.
You're right. Yeah. Jewish theologian.
A Jewish theologian wrote, excuse me, wrote that book. He uses the word thou.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You'll probably find in the sermon I'll use you probably a little bit more because...
It doesn't need to be a stumbling block for some people. Third question, peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. That's found in the Beatitudes in Matthew 5. Scazzaro notes that we often paraphrase this verse, at least in practice, as blessed are the conflict avoiders. What kind of peace is produced by this kind of peacemaker? Have you ever been such a person or experienced the pain and confusion of someone else's false peacemaking? What unresolved conflicts do you wrestle with silently today, and how might you follow Jesus' example and replace false peace with true?
Well, this is such a, you know, we find this everywhere. You're satisfied with a solution that at least looks nice. That, you know, if we can paper over the cracks of our differences, then at least we can appear to be happy. But we've hidden true peace.
Right.
We by doing that, we can't come to a point where we can even agree comfortably to think differently. We're not prepared to confront the real issues. We confront just enough of the issue to make sure that we're not punching each other in the face.
Do you want to talk for a minute about the idea of having something under the table in a relationship?
Right.
I think that fits in here.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that you look like in a group or in a meeting is that issues that go under the table. Let's just say, David, that you and I are in a meeting, and yet you and I haven't been getting on terribly well. We have. Don't worry about it. Don't send us emails or whatever. But we haven't. And so we come around this meeting, and there's something under the table, which is David really is upset with me at the moment. And so we begin to talk about the agenda, but everything that David says is colored for me by the fact that I don't think he thinks very much of me at the moment. And right. that stayed under the table. Whereas if we got that out from under the table and said, David, let's resolve this. You know, let's either, you
bring
know,
this out
however
in the
we
open.
Need to do, yeah. bring it out in the open, deal with it, then all of the rest of the conversations that we have are real conversations. There's a real peace. There's nothing under the table that we are, because who knows, if I'm thinking that David doesn't like me or whatever, he's probably thinking something about me, which
right.
is culling his opinion of the things that I say. And I heard somebody say, if you don't deal with the items that are under the table, you never really deal effectively with the items that are on your agenda above the table, mm-hmm. because they're so influenced by it. But yes, I think it's a really good example of a false peace. Because we're sitting either side of the table, David, smiling at one another, pretending that everything's okay. But all of that is going on in our minds.
Yeah, yeah. I think that transitions well into our last question, which at least in part addresses expectations we have of other people,
right.
and assumptions. So this question is called Learning the Skills. Pages 178 to 185 describe 5 different practical exercises we can perform to learn how to better love our neighbor and treat them as a thou instead of an it. Review these practices together as a group until you are confident you understand and can apply them. Is there a situation or relationship in your life right now which could benefit from the application of one of these exercises?
Yes. There's really not that much to say about this, other than the fact that you very clearly given. And I think that the important thing to recognize about this is recognizing these things. These will not be things that you can instantly put right. Everything, I just do all of these things, tick all of these boxes, and everything will be okay. These are the areas where we need to grow in order to be the sort of people that God calls us to be.
Right. And these are tools we can use to help improve our relationship.
Absolutely.
And love people well.
And they're things we can recognize. If something's not going well with somebody, then we can look at these things and think, do any of these apply? Am I making assumptions
right,
about this
right.
person? Do I have expectations of them
that are unrealistic?
That are unrealistic, mm-hmm. or they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
we've had a couple of occasions, David, when we've sat in this room and we've talked about things and we've realized that what I expected was different than what you expected. And, you know, that's neither of our, it's neither and both of our faults.
But right.
Because but neither of us took the time to clarify the expectations in order that we might
right.
be on the same page.
It's communication without fear of offending someone.
Right, absolutely.
Mm. All right, well, that wraps it up. I hope this conversation has been helpful for you and your small group. Next week, we will be in our last chapter of this book, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, and we're going to tackle the rule of life. I really like that concept, the rule of life. So I hope to see you guys then. God bless.
As I wait.